Well, folks, we got a very special show for you today here on this episode of Later This Morning in Rome. We are in a room full of legends. I got to be honest with you, I don't get nervous going on the radio much, but I'm a little bit nervous today because, boy, we got a heck of a room of people today. But we've got Kenneth Studdard of Dogwood Books with us, of course.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Wonderful. Excited about today's show.
Yes, sir.
It's going to be a really interesting hour, and we always talk about this potentially being the fastest hour of radio. You're going to blink your eyes, and it's going to be over today, for sure. But we also have with us the author of Lindale, Lint, and Leather. Randall McCord is back due to popular demand again.
Right.
And this is becoming kind of a series here. And then last but not least, of course, we've got legendary football coach Lynn Honeycutt, who is in the studio with us. And Coach, thank you so much for taking some time to join us today.
It's been my pleasure. I'm glad to be here.
We're looking forward to hearing some of your stories today. And we'll just kind of go ahead and jump in. But, of course, we've been doing the series about the book. Mm-hmm. And, Randall, where do you think we should start here?
Well, we got to athletics, I think. We wanted to talk about athletics. And then we talked about Coach Honeycutt is a big part of athletics now, you know, of the book. If you look at the book, you'll see he's featured a good bit in this Lindale Linton Leather, the leather part for sure, you know. So
as a player, as a coach,
yes.
You know, as a leader of the program and
yes.
All sorts of things.
So many things that the general public do not know about Lynn Honeycutt.
Well, I'm excited. I've learned a lot. I grew up in Lindale, went to Pepperell High School, graduated in 97. And I have to be honest with you, when you were here the last time last week, I didn't realize there wasn't a football stadium there until the 80s.
October of 85.
That is wild. I bet you a lot of young people, you know, don't realize that, you know, what the program was like before Coach Honeycutt came and got things rolling.
Yeah. Lynn played 10 games on the road for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
We played at Armurchie on Saturday nights. Yeah. We played at Model on Friday nights when they were on the road. And you know, and that's tough. That is really, really tough. And I have people sometime during this time that Coach was with us and we was with him. I had people that see Coach Honeycutt on the sideline hollering at the referees.
We're starting there.
And this is their persona, you know. And I had a friend, I think it was in Armurchie too, and he was telling me about, well, Lynn Honeycutt knows this, and Lynn Honeycutt said, look, I can tell by what you say you don't know Lynn Honeycutt.
Well, we were having a conversation amongst the group before we went on the air, kind of debating whether or not we should take phone calls. If there's any officials out there that have any stories, we're not going to go there.
Oh, that's great. I got a picture. There's a picture in the Lindale Linton Leather with Coach in his later years, I guess. And the official was in the background, and it looks like he's just gotten through with the official and turned to somebody else on the sidelines, you know. So specifically put that in there because I thought it was very significant, the picture was, you know. But
Well, Coach, I read that your family moved to the Rome area in 1965. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So So where did y'all move here from?
My daddy worked for the railroad, so we born in Macon, and we moved from Opelika. I actually went to Opelika High School right outside of Auburn, University of Auburn. That's where I really got exposed to athletics, to be quite honest. I used to go over there and watch Jimmy Sile and Tucker Ferguson play and just anything to get in a ball game, selling Cokes or renting cushions. Back then, you rented cushions. They didn't buy cushions. You had to take them all up after the ball game, what have you. And I got really interested in football. I really thought baseball and really basketball was going to be my calling card. That's why I think I'm so big on kids playing everything, because you never know. And then he transferred up here, and that's when it all kind of started and what have you. So and enrolled in Pepperell High School the second semester of my freshman year.
Gotcha. So you started out as an Auburn guy, huh?
Well, my wife's daddy played at Auburn.
Gotcha.
He was back in World War II. A lot of people, football's been my whole life, you know, as I got on. Of course, both my kids played college football, and I played college football. My father-in-law played at Auburn. He also was a tight end and played with some great great players down there. So, yeah, at one time, I guess my wife probably, although she's an alumnus at the University of Georgia, probably still has some pretty strong feelings for the Auburn Tigers.
That's pretty interesting. Of course, he's here on the video, as you can see, and he's got a hairy dog jacket on and played college football over at Georgia. So that's kind of an interesting turn there to go from an Auburn fan to playing at Georgia. But
yeah. Well, I guess, you know, you just don't know how paths are going to lead you and what have you. And of course, if my father hadn't transferred up here, never been in this area probably, so that's just life.
I got you. Well, let's talk a little bit about the playing days. And we've already got a few comments on our Facebook live feed. I had a feeling that people would start showing up there and leaving some comments. But Missy Gomez said, good morning, guys. Go Dragons. Of course, I see that your wife, Margie Honeycutt, is watching. And then Kevin Fountain has chimed in with a couple of clapping hands and a couple of footballs. I'd imagine you're pretty familiar with him, huh?
Right. Yeah, both Kevin and Kelly, they were good athletes at Pepperdine. Of course, Kelly was on a state championship football team. So, yeah, I'm very familiar with that family.
Gotcha. Well, do you want to, you know, talk a little bit about the play-in days when you were at Pepperell and that sort of thing? I know there's a lot of chapters in the book about that, so.
Let's stay at Georgia for just a minute.
Okay, okay.
The first time I ever heard the name Lynn Honeycutt was on a black and white television. We had color, but at our house we owned still had the black and white. And Coach, I'm not sure about the time, but I know you were playing Georgia Tech in Grant Field, national television. And I think you made a great catch in the corner of the end zone. Am I right?
Not in the end zone. I made some catches. Well, you know, we had just lost to Pat Sullivan, Terry B's great Auburn team. We were 10-0. We were kind of a downtrodden game that night. It was on Thanksgiving night and on national TV or however they did it back then. And I remember I dropped a touchdown pass. I was wide open. And that's where our whole team kind of played, though. After that loss to Auburn, you know, we just were not into it. So, you know, I was able to contribute, make three or four, you know, catches to get us down there. And, of course, Jimmy Shower made Mike Green, a tight end, made a great catch on the last fourth down drive. Andy Johnson and the Greek Streak, Jimmy Poulos, was able to push it across for a winning touchdown after Andy hit Jimmy Shower on a tremendous pass on about the 1.5 yard line. Mm-hmm. So we won the last 13 seconds and then went on, you know, there to the Gator Bowl. But yeah, that was 11-1 football team, one of the best teams that Georgia had had for a long time. Yeah. And I was just in Athens the last couple of days and got to reunite with a lot of those players and what have you, and coaches. And so, yeah, that was a big moment.
Yeah, and I was coaching at center. I was assistant at center at that time, and I didn't remember the name. Lynn Honeycutt makes a great catch, and they had to replay then. You know, used to, they didn't have the replay. Well, they had to replay, and they replayed it, and Lynn made a great catch. And I just, the name, just, it's an unusual name. It's Lynn Honeycutt. It's, you know, it's kind of a special name even then. So I didn't know since 1983 that I would hear the name Lynn Honeycutt again, but I'd see him in person, you know. But that was a great... He had a tremendous Georgia career. My gosh, you could read it. And I researched a lot of it, and I recommend everybody to look at that leather part of Lynn Honeycutt, and you'll see just what a great coach and man he is.
That's really neat. And you mentioned going back there and revisiting with those guys and that sort of thing. What's it like when you go to Athens and see how much things have changed over the years? It's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. Well, college football has changed so much. Of course, I played when you had the train tracks up on the hill, you know, and before they closed that side in. And, you know, you'd be 70,000 people. Now that's close to 100,000 people. But, I mean, it's just the transformation, not only the University of Georgia, but college football is big money, you know, big money and nice facilities, and of course it's all about recruiting players, really the big deal right now. The Jimmies and the Joes make a big part of who wins in college football, so their budgets are just outlandish. But it's great to get up there. I wish I could get there more. Of course, coaching football on Friday night and back when we did, and having to go do film swaps, they didn't have all this digital stuff and all these technology things, and so you you'd work at 2 o'clock in the morning and then turn around a lot of times, meet with your team on Saturday, and it's just real hard to get over there. But when I do get over there, I really enjoy, you know, visiting with a lot of the old coaches and players.
And of course, you played for legendary coach Vince Dooley. And so obviously you've had a legendary coaching career. So what did you pick up from him and learn from being in his locker room and you know, observing close hand as being one of his players, his leadership style and things of that sort?
Well, I think Coach Dooley was always true to his word. He was a firm man. He let his coaches coach. I had some tremendous coaching in college. Some people I admire my whole life, but Coach Dooley was all about team, and that's kind of what I was all about. You know, big team, little me, all for one and one for all. You know, that kind of mannerisms, the way he went about it. But he was tough. I mean, you know, Coach Dooley was a run-oriented football team. You know, we play action pass. Of course, the evolution of the passing game came way after my time. You know, you catch as many catches now in one ball game as you might do in your career back in those days. It's just the way it's changed. But, you know, I just got tremendous respect for all the Dooley family and all the coaches at the University of Georgia.
Well, once your playing days at Georgia concluded, what was the process like for you figuring out the next steps in your life? Did you always know that you wanted to be a football coach, or did you have some other things in mind?
Well, I was a banking and finance major at the University of Georgia, and probably could have made a heck of a lot more money doing that, without a doubt. And I had some networks and some opportunities, but, you know, I got to thinking, sitting in a room with four walls, no windows, I just didn't really know how happy I was going to be doing that. So I transferred to business education. That's how I came about teaching classes like you took, and keyboarding and computer applications and business law and that. And that was so I would not lose all my credits that I had in business.
I always tell people that story when your name comes up. I'm like, I really learned to type in that class, because you would come in and you might put on a tape or something like that and walk out of the room and go do something else. But everybody knew that Coach Honeycutt was somewhere close by, and you better be doing what you're supposed to be doing. So I know ASDF, JKL, semicolon, the touch system as well as anybody.
Right.
True story.
So that's how that came about. And, of course, my first job interview, Marge and I got married my senior year in college, and my first job interview was with Bainbridge, Georgia, and it was, I mean, it's just a little old typical South Georgia town with a courthouse and a little street around it, what have you. And we started coming back up 75, and one Robbins High School had a coaching opening. I hadn't been in contact. I said, let's just pull over there and see. And so we did, and sat up there with Coach Robert Davis, who's a legend in Georgia, 300-plus wins, you know, multiple state and national championships. And I was able to be part of some of those. And James Brooks and Ronald Sims and Jimmy Womack, who played for, who was Herschel's blocking back while the whole time Herschel was at the University of Georgia. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it's just like God led me to that place, and I had a great 8 years there. And that's where I really decided I had that fire to want to try to, you know, have an impact myself on kids as a head coach.
Well, eventually, you know, you work your way back to Lindale and Pepperell High School, and as they say, the rest is history. But, you know, I was reading in the book, you know, the few years leading up to you coming there and starting to build that program, it was pretty tough times, wasn't it, Rand?
We were 1-19.
1-19.
2 years before Lynn Honeycutt came. And he probably don't remember that. Well, he does, too, because he remembers everything. So we had, a semi search committee, booster club, you know, that group that we had. And there was a number one prospect, Thurston Taylor, mm-hmm. who had won two consecutive state championships, and that's who they all wanted.
Palmetto High School.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And everybody, and I want to say, well, yeah, everybody, there's about eight of us, everybody wanted Thurston Taylor. And if he ever set foot on the Pepperell campus, I don't know it. He may have, but I don't know it. But Coach Honeycutt came to Hotchie's breakfast building down there across from the mill one Saturday morning, and he brought a projector and 16-millimeter film of two games of Fitzgerald High School, and we sat there, and he played the highlights of the two seasons. Well, I guess his past season he was in, you know. And I thought, I'm an old coach, and I'm thinking, hey, this is not bad, you know. This is pretty good. Coach Honeycutt obviously wants the job, and I've never seen Thurston Taylor. You know, the other guys may have, but I haven't. But anyway, when Coach got through and we all met, and they said, well, we still want Thurston Taylor. What do you think, Randall? And I said, well, if it's going to be all of y'all going to vote for Thurston, I'll go along with the crew and make it unanimous. But I like Lynn Honeycutt's presentation, and I like him as a coach, so I would not be disappointed. And I've never told you this story, Coach, but that's a true fact. You'll ask, most of them are dead now, but anyway, the ones that are living, you ask them, and they'll tell you, yeah, he said that. So I liked him, I guess, from day one, better than Thurston Taylor, anyway.
Wow. Yes, you know. So I'm curious, though, when you look, as Mr. McCord just described, that record and how tough it had been, what made you look at that specific job and say, we can make a success of this? There is some potential there. Because a lot of people might look at that and be like, why would somebody want to take this job? This is...
Well, you know, they were averaging getting beat, I think, that 1-19 average, giving up 36 points and scoring 3 points. It wasn't like they were competing. I mean, they were getting blowed out pretty much. Of course, a big thing is my wife, Margie, is from Cedartown. And, you know, and that was kind of home for her and getting up closer to her family and what have you. And then myself as well, because I had been at Pepperell as a student athlete for 3 years, and my folks were retired there. And so I think it had a lot to do with that. I want to get back up around that area and what have you. You know, I'd been at Fitzgerald for 2 years, and we had a lot of success down there. I always felt like if I had gotten that Fitz, when I had... they reached out to me, I was hired by Fitzgerald. If I could have went through that first spring with them, I didn't get on campus until about July. And that first year, we upset Waycross, who won the state that year, was on team to beat them. We had some athletes, but we just wasn't organized and didn't have enough time to get organized. We finished like 5-5 or 6-4, but we were really tough at the end of the year. And just one thing after another. I had applied for the Pepperell job previously, and another time, I came, might have been when they hired CB, but, you know, I didn't get the job, you know, so I just kind of stayed after it, I guess.
And sometimes, you know, it's a timing thing and all those kind of things, and everything's worked out tremendously. There's no question about that. I mean, let's face it, your name's on the field there. And obviously, I know we're going to talk about the 1990 season. But Mr. McCord, where do you think we should take the conversation from here?
Well, the 83 season was the first, Lynn's first year. 83 and 84, I guess we won two games in the
83 games.
We were 2 or 3 games in the first year or second year. But we were in practically every game. I mean, we took them right down to good. I'm talking about East, West, Cartersville, Carrollton, on and on and on. And we played them tough, right down to the wire. So we knew, or I did, hey, it's just a matter of time. We're going to kick butt. and we were. And Coach talked about him running the ball, and he did. His philosophy was Coach Dooley, run the ball. And that's what I think you got to do. But he forgets. Well, he don't forget, but we had, I think, my son was a quarterback for him, so I get the feedback, you know, from it. We had some color sets. If we got down 4 touchdowns, we went to color sets. Then we covered.
Right.
And we had 4 or 5 wide receivers, and we started throwing the football. Most people don't know that. Let's see that. Well, it was his second year, third year, and fourth year. We led the area in passing, if I'm not mistaken, Coach.
With
Glenn Atkins.
Yeah, he was good.
He was the best quarterback throwing in the whole region, 7AA. Now, that's a pretty good region if you think about it, 7AA. And we didn't run from the spread formation, but we threw the football. When we needed to, we threw it. So he knew what to do if we got behind. If we was in front, we was going to run the ball. If we was behind, well, we were going to throw it a little bit, you know, so. He's more than just run.
Well, the one thing that was real tough about the Pepperell job is we did not have a facility, and just finding a place to practice, much less play. We didn't have a home ball game for 2.5 years while I was there. A lot of people don't know that. You know, they had the baseball field, and we used that for the practice field. And then they, when they started construction and what have you, we had to move across over there. We called Bearcat Creek over there. Carry all the dummies over there to practice on that little old field over there at the elementary school where the girls' softball field is now. We had a homecomings at Model and Almerchi, and that was a big setback, you know, as far as getting to where we wanted to get as fast as we could get. That was difficult, playing about 25 ball games on the road before we finally played Cartersville in 1985. There was a couple of things that, you know, you get verbal promises when you take a job. One of the verbal promises, I kind of knew that we're going to close K-Spring School eventually, and we thought we was going to get a lot of those kids. We actually did not. Most of those ended up going to Coosa, and we got, you know, just a very small part of that. And we was going to get a football field. Basically, what we got. We had to do a lot of the work on finishing the football field ourselves, you know, the Dragon Club and the people that really supported and what have you. And I can't remember what the third one was, but you know, when you get promises and verbal promises, that's all they really are, verbal promises. And but you know, from that time on, we got that field. And like Randall said, we upset Keith Henderson and both Cartersville, who, you know, ended up being a great player at Georgia.
He had the fist pump when you talk about that.
You know, he's a great high school All-American. But he was, I think, a player for the whole state his senior year. And we had some upsets, and we competed. We beat Bremen, who was defending state champs, the very first game that my coach at Purple. They were coming off a state championship. It was a tremendous upset. Now, we didn't win many more, but we did compete, you know.
I have a question for you. You know, obviously some of the names and faces change over the years, but at some point I would imagine that your coaching staff kind of gelled and came together and really had some buy-in from those guys. So who would you say were the core group of your coaches that really bought into what you were trying to do and the process that you were trying to instill to build the program?
Well, that was one thing. You know, I had a coaching staff that I built, and they stayed together, you know, for a long time. Jimmy Fair, Steve Horn, I'm trying to think, Mike Hensley, Randall, you helped me, I lose track.
You got me too.
But, you know, and you know, ended up hiring a lot of players that I coached, like Todd Wheeler, Jeff Shiflett.
Irvin.
Oh, yeah. And so, I mean, and I believed in promoting coaches from within. Now, I think all my coaches tell you, I let them coach. You know, I'd coach my coaches, and I let them coach, but I did hold them accountable. You know, if something wasn't going good or something wasn't being taught as we had talked about philosophy wise, you know, and they'll tell you that David Jones, I know I left him out. I mean, there's so many I can go on. But we had a core, like you said, that stayed together for a long time. And Randy Johnson, you know, was a state championship team as a coach, and everybody knows about his prowess and his athletic accomplishments. And I don't want to name everybody, because I know I'm going to leave somebody out. But, you know, that's the key. That is, you know, the head coach gets all the blame, gets all the credit, but the key is, I'm just going to tell you, is your staff. And that's how I see, like we were talking about Jeff, what Jeff is doing over at Model right now. Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of those same Purple kids that play with him, and you know that. He's building his staff from within, and the key is keeping them together and letting them coach and making them know that they are a vital part of that program. So,
and I think a lot of people don't realize how tough it is, you know, to build a program at today's times with the way the current state of football is, because there's a lot of challenges that come with that. The talent pool's spread out. We got a lot of schools here and that sort of thing. And all that to say, man, he is doing an excellent job out there at Model. That's going to make you super proud.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, I think he's doing a good job, and I think he's on the right track to do something big there. I mean, you go to the ball games, reminds me a lot of the old days of Purple. They have a tremendous crowd, and they're competitive. I mean, you know, you only can do so much depending upon the Jimmies and Joes that you have. And to be quite honest, you find out anything like basketball this year at Milam, they had a tremendous team, and then you run into somebody that's got better. I mean, you see it firsthand, players you got, and you just, you know, you that's why you work on all those toughness things and mental toughness, physical toughness, to try to get through that. It don't matter what sport that is. I went down and watched Pepperell play yesterday in baseball, and coach is doing a tremendous job down there. It's team building is so important. About the core of your team is being firm and fair, and developing those kids' skills as well as making them mentally and physically tough. And I think Jeff's doing a good job of that.
We got to take our first break, and we'll do that. We'll come back. We'll keep the conversation going. But we've got a great group of guys here in the studio today. Kenneth Studdard of Dogwood Books is with us, as every Wednesday. Randall McCord, author of Lindell, Lint, and Leather. And then, of course, we've got legendary football coach Lynn Honeycutt with us today. And we'll keep the conversation going after these messages. We'll be back.
During the loss of a loved one, people can feel somewhat vulnerable. We as funeral professionals offer a level of care like no others. We too have been through the loss of a loved one or friend. Therefore, we want to be the experts who can help you navigate the challenges you will face during this time. Daniel's Funeral Home Associates will be there for you to give you the professionalism and compassion that your family deserves as you navigate through the fog of grief. We love this community, and we count it such an honor to serve you. And remember, we are always here for you.
That's Daniel's Funeral Home and Cremation Service, 706-232-3646.
We are here with Dr. Buddy Keene of the Proctor Keene Chiropractic Clinic. And Dr. Keene, you want to talk about mid-back pain.
That is right. It's something we don't talk about all that much, but we do talk about pain between your shoulders and in that area. Sometimes it'll come around to the chest, make you think you're having a heart attack. I know I read an article one time by a cardiologist that said a lot of people think they're having heart attacks and it's actually coming from their spine. So if you're having a problem between your shoulders, it could radiate into the chest and create pain there. Those things respond very well to chiropractic care, and you might want to give chiropractic a call. Give us a call. We're in the office Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, 8:30 to 12, 2 to 6, Saturday, 8:30 to 12. Phone number 706-291-1971.
Call today and get that healthy, happy feeling.
Landowners, there's a new Mahindra dealer in Rome, Georgia. Mathis Trailers and Equipment Sales is now an official dealer of Mahindra, the official tractor of Tough. Mahindra tractors have a heavy-duty steel frame and more built-in weight, so you can safely do more work. Come see Mahindra's full line from subcompact to utility tractors and save big at Mathis Trailers and Equipment Sales, 3420 Kingston Highway in Rome, Georgia. Go see them today at Mathis Trailers and Equipment Sales. In 1969, we had textile mills, Brighton, Pepperell, Celanese, with workers who played baseball and were good. Names like Bing, Culberson, Wright, Abat, Amit. Ah, the good old days. And J Supply was born. 55 years later, the mills are gone, but baseball remains, and you still have J Supply, your family-owned local distributor for industrial safety, janitorial, and now hydraulic supplies. Go Braves! All right, we welcome you back here to Later This Morning in Rome and our Wednesday edition. Kenneth Studdard of Dogwood Books here. Also, Randall McCord, author of Lindell, Lint, and Leather. And we've got Coach Lynn Honeycutt here in the studio. Before we jump back into the conversation, I do want to mention some more comments that we have here on our Facebook Live feed. Clay Graham has chimed in and said, best coach ever. Congrats, coach. And then Kevin Fountain's chimed back in. He said, I believe Randall's like 85, but sharp as a tack. Awesome book he has put together. Enjoy reading it, guys.
Well,
so a good compliment there from Kevin. And then Austin Butler's chimed in and tagged a few people to try to get them online here watching this. And one of them I know is one of your former players who has just had a tremendous amount of success, and I know the community's super proud of him, what he's doing in media, but Rusty Mansell, what a career that guy's put together.
Oh, it's unreal. Yeah, he's done a tremendous job and had to make some tough decisions. He's a risk taker, and my hat's off to him. He does a great job of promoting high school football in the state of Georgia, as well as college football as well. So
does a great job. And then let's see, we've got a question here. This is from our sheriff, Dave Robertson. He wants to know if there's any chapters on the corn tassels.
Yes, well, not chapters, but plenty of corn tassels the book.
Okay.
Yes, Ronnie, and of course I knew Ronnie well, you know, and Brian. Of course, Brian's one of my other children. Brian Corntassel is, you know, but the Corntassels are throughout Lindale Lint and Leather, and a great family. Native American, you know, Native Americans, you know, and a lot of them moved, of course, to Oklahoma when they had to, but some of them came back, you know. So Kendall probably knows probably more about that than I would, but.
Jeff Robertson can come by the store and we'll show him the corn tassels in the book.
Mm. Absolutely.
We'll sell him one too.
Cool. Yes.
That's right. And speaking of selling some books, we've got a real nice one here that we'd like to take this opportunity to plug. I'm going to show it to the camera here in case you haven't seen this massive book, and it is very thorough is one of the words that's been used to describe it. But it's good. I was reading some chapters in it yesterday, and it was interesting being somebody that, you know, grew up in Lindale and seeing a lot of names that I went to school with that I hadn't thought about in a long time. I'm like, oh my goodness. But this is just really good stuff. It's going to bring back a lot for a lot of people. So.
And I wish people, and especially Lindale, but everywhere else, would buy a copy, because all the receipts, every penny, and Kenneth can vouch for this, everything goes back in the community, you know, with Fellowship of Christian Athletes, Purple Ambassadors. I think we've already given 1,000 to the Lindale Cemetery, another cemetery down on the state line, and the Rome History Museum, and so I want to know every penny. And we'll come. You can come check our books if you want to. And I assure you, I can show you where we've given it right back in the community. So buy it, and you're helping the community. It's a pretty good read, if I say so myself.
Hey, yeah. I know where you can get one. Dogwood Books down on Broad Street, man. And you got a pretty good supply right now.
We do. So, Rebel takes care of me.
So when the show's over, you can head on over downtown. Kenneth is going to be heading over there, and you can get you a copy of this book. Well, I know you had a couple things you wanted to touch on, and like every time that you've been here, the time is just flying by, and we still have a state championship year to talk about. Yeah. But what did you want to talk about before we move into that?
The first 2 years, you know, my son was a rising freshman, I'm sorry. Coach, you came aboard in January of 83, right? Mm-hmm. And Jamie was still in the eighth grade, but he was a spring training, he was considered a freshman, you know. So we sort of grew up with Coach Honeycutt, you know, and I get a lot of stories that he didn't tell me then, but later on they came out, you know, and he said, you know, the first 2 years of our schedule, when we were saying we were playing at Armurchie and Model and all, he said, we played in 6 homecoming games every year. And I said, Now think about that. Think about that, football fans. 6 homecoming games in 1 year. We played in ours, and then everybody we played on the road wanted to play us. Isn't that right, Coach? Right. They wanted to play us. Jamie said, Jamie was a place kicker, so when we warmed up in the end zone, he said, we kicked footballs into all the floats. Well said, Jamie.
Yeah, we saw him crown a lot of homecoming beauties. We sure did.
So that was.
We got another comment from my mom, and she wanted to make sure that we congratulated you, Coach, on the award that you recently have picked up, and a wonderful write-up in the Rome News Tribune this past week. She said, well deserved, sir. So congratulations to you on behalf of my mom. Yeah. Well, let's see. Where should we go from here? You want to start talking a little bit about the lead-up to 1990 and how the process was starting to pay off, and you could see some things turning for your program?
Well, yeah, I think in 1988, we really started turning the program around. I'd been there about 5 years, and there was Randall's boy, and like I said, John Allen, a stellar athlete there, and you know, from a run of about 1988 all the way up to even after I left, even past the book, to about 2000, I'd say probably eight, I felt like we had as good a program as anybody and in the whole state. Now, county-wise, you know, West Rome was so solid for those 10-year span, and Jerry Sharp at East Rome had some just, you know, great teams over there, and then also did the same thing at Darlington. But from about 1988 to about 2000, I'd say around about eight, solid with, Pepper was a solid football program. I'm not talking about just locally, but the entire state of Georgia. And that's when it all started getting good. Of course, it built up to the 1990 state championship team. And then we were so competitive. We were ranked number one so many times in the state. We always had to play those, usually the state champ. You know, our region was so tough. I mean, you talk about 7AA, you're talking about Cartersville and the West Rome and East Rome Central. And Cedartown and Central of Carrollton and Villarica and then, you know, and then LaGrange came in. And I mean, to win five ball games in that league was nothing to hang your head about, you know what I'm saying? And there was many times where before they started expanding playoffs, you used to be just region champ, and we were 2-9-1 and didn't even make the playoffs. And it came about with this region being so tough, I think the state realized that with the battles that West Rome and West Rome and Central Carrollton had during that 6-year period, where West Rome won four straight state championships and Central Carrollton won two, and they had lost to West Rome in the region championship game almost every time, and several times in overtime. Yeah. And that's when it expanded to two and eventually went to four. There were so many good teams that we had. I think, like Rusty Mansell said one time, at one time we were 31-3 and made the playoffs one time.
That's crazy.
And that was and we won the state 15-0. Had to go 15-0 and do that. You were 31-3 and won this, and in the playoffs only one time. Now just think about that.
It kind of makes me mad thinking about that, because it makes you wonder, you know, what could have happened had it been the way it is now.
It's the way the system was, and it's expanded and it's good and what have you. But like I said, there was a period there from about 1988 to 2008, even after I retired in 2006. We had problems making schedules. We were going to Alabama. We played Stevens County, North Jackson. They were powerhouse and beat them both times in state champs. They had a long run of state championships over there. So, like I said, I'd put our program at that time as good as anybody in the state, you know, for that period of time. And that's not taking nothing away from the great West Rome legacies, as everybody in Rome knows, and the East Rome, and the great teams that Jerry Sharp had. You know, Jerry and I had a lot of battles, you know, and he's a tremendous coach and had some tremendous success and tremendous players at East Rome and Darlington. I think people don't realize what a great coach he was.
So when a program goes from where you were and you start seeing that success and start getting attention around the state, and you go from a situation, you know, where you kind of become the hunted and that kind of stuff, what kind of things change in terms of not necessarily the process, but what changes pros and cons once that starts to happen?
Well, number one, you get some people jealous.
Yeah.
You know, when you got a county that's got six schools, there's some jealousy. And do we ever handle some of our own people that didn't know how to handle the success? I felt like, you know, you build a monster, you got to keep feeding it. Kirby will tell you that. If you don't keep feeding that monster, you know, people get upset, or, you know, it dies and what have you. So it took a lot of hard work, not only during the season, but also in the off season. And the community had to really stay steadfast with you, you know. You know, you get rumors and innuendos, and we got plenty of them while I was down there. I don't mind telling you that. Having people, having a professional practice commission come in, accusing us of doing steroids and that kind of thing, because our kids were so
strong. That's crazy.
We built our kids in the weight room. You know, our kids were tremendously strong. You know, we were shepherds of the bigger, faster, stronger program. I've talked to coaches that when we competed against them, they really dreaded playing us because it was going to be a physical ball game. We had so many physical players, from the John Allens to the Brian Smiths to the Todd Wheelers to the Jeff and Honeycutt, Greg Honeycutt, you name them, Randall, Ken Irvin. I mean, there hadn't been a better athlete, you know, in this area than Ken Irvin, in my personal opinion, in the history of athletics. But, you know, you just have to deal with that, you know. Being a leader and doing the right things for the kids, sometimes you have to make some tough decisions, you know. Yeah. I was the type of coach that was going to stay steadfast with my kids, and I guess that's where I kind of got that people thought I was kind of hard on officials. I wasn't hard on officials. I was hard on officials sometimes not knowing the rules when the head coach knew the rules better than the official. You know what I'm saying? You know, after I had my massive heart attack, a lot of them accused me that they were surprised. I said, "Coach, we didn't think you had a heart." So, you know, but I think my kids knew I always had their back, and you know, and most of the time I even had sometimes some officials to let me know that I was right. You know, about the rules. There's just the application of the rules. Yeah. But my hats off to officials because they have a tough job and. Yeah. You know, it's so demanding, and that's why it's such a shortage of officials. And I got a tremendous amount of respect for officials as I've gotten out of it now compared to where it was. And I got a lot of great friends as officials. So,
when Coach came in '83, he had a vision of everything he has spoken to today. A vision. He had a vision, and one thing, we didn't have any money.
No,
and he talked to, and we had a core group of Dragon Boosters who were true Dragon Boosters, you know, and that group got together and Coach said, "We got to raise some money, but we need some money now." "Well, how much, Coach?" He said, $25,000 or $30,000. Now you're talking 83 and 84 now. If you multiply that out now, that's a lot of money. Well, we had an alumni born and raised in Lindale. His name was Renee Fountain, and I mentioned that to Renee, and he said, "Randall, if y'all need $25,000 or $30,000, I will loan it to you at 1%, so you know, keep it legal, and you can keep it and let me know when you can pay it back." Because we had some fundraisers we knew were going to be good, but we just didn't have any money then. And Renee said, "I'll write you a check, and you pay me back." But then he said, "Randall, will you stand for it if they can't pay it back?" And I said, "Yes. You just give us the money, and if the club don't pay you back, I'll get it up somewhere or another." And he said, "Okay." And we did this, I don't know, 10 years, I guess, Lynn, wasn't it, when we needed some money. We'd say, "Renee, I need about $20,000. He said, "Okay, come by the office." I'm telling you, he loves Lindale, and he loves Pepperell Sports. I mean, he loves Alabama sports too. I need to throw that in there. So, but he's a great supporter, absolutely, and I appreciate him. And he, you know, he funded the book.
Oh, okay. I did not know that.
He funded, and you'd be surprised how much that book cost to print and publish. And I said, "Well, I'll spend 6.5 years working on it." And he said, "I'll pay for it if you'll write it." And I said, "You got it. You got it." And so we're very proud of that, you know. So.
We've got a couple of comments I do want to mention, and we are about 8 minutes left until the show is going to wind down, so it's just flying by. But two quick comments here. We've got David Mathis. We knew he was going to turn up at some point or another. He said, "Coach, thank you for your dedication and commitment to our community and restoring the pride back in Lindale." So that's from David Mathis. And then we've heard from our buddy Rodney Waddell. He said, "I had the honor of having Coach Honeycutt's first game back after his heart attack against Cartersville. Man, that was tough, even before the game started." He was an official, of course, and works for FedEx. He's one of our buddies, charging quite a bit. But Mr. McCord, would you like to spend maybe the last 6 or 7 minutes here talking about the state? Can we cover enough during that span of time?
The big game, of course, was we were 15-0, Coach, in 90.
Yeah, the big game was Early County.
Yeah,
it was a big game. I guess it was your
15th. That was a state championship game down in Blakely, you know. And They said, the sports writer said, you might have missed, if you blinked, you might have missed the biggest play in the game. So we knocked the ball loose and covered it to win the game. You know, everybody knows that story. But just, golly, you just can't imagine. We came from 1-19 to 15-0, and we played some folks, Coach, that year, too. I mean, right. We didn't dodge nobody that year.
Well, now, Early County was coached by Ed Pilcher, who's a Hall of Fame coach in the state of Georgia, and is deceased at this time. But, I mean, he was up there and went to Thomas County Central and built a dynasty. But that was the best team, supposedly, in South Georgia. I think they had beat Valdosta that year, you know, or one of the teams in the Valdosta region. I mean, they had some hosses, and we had some good players, but most of our players were 185 to 205 pounds. We had a couple of kids like a Gabe Goggins and Eric Dowdy might weigh 220 or more, you know. But we were quick, we were fast, and especially on defense. Tony Hall was just a tackling machine. You know, we had a tremendous secondary with Jonathan Price and Ken Irvin and Jermaine
Brandon
Roberts,
Brandon Davis.
Yeah. And on offense, we were unstoppable with the platoon quarterback Scott Crabb and Ken Irvin with Frankie Fletcher and Mike Davis and who am I leaving out back in the backfield?
I can't remember either.
But those were some key cogs, and Rusty Mansell was our tight end, and Rusty, you know, Rusty considers himself a role player. I don't, you know, he made some big catches. You know, we were a play action type of team. We had them hosses back there, but he made some big plays and always graded out very well blocking and what have you.
Yeah, and Matt, you appreciate this. We got the pregame, postgame on the radios as we were getting ready to go back to Rome, which was a long way off. You know, we were in Florida almost, you know. And we got the post game, Coach Pilcher, and since it's already was on the radio, I can say this, I can repeat this.
Is that how that works?
The announcer said, okay, Coach, tell me about it. And he said, I got the gun if you got the bullet.
He talking about, he's about ready to shoot. They blew the gas for
you. That one play, I've got the gun if you got the bullet.
We had so many of those tough kids on that team. I can't remember. Bo Payne was a tremendous nose guard, made plays from sideline to sideline. Ashley, defensive end, was just tremendous. You know, you don't want to start Mike Robinson, a tremendous linebacker. We had so many. Our offensive line was just a machine. You know, they played so good, spearheaded by center Brent Alexander, and you know, that team. And we had a great kicker, and him and Randall.
I lost it in a minute,
but he was good, that's why I won't start mention names because I forget somebody. It's hard to say before, but I mean, it's just amazing that team and the performance they had and what have you. So,
at that time, the championships were held at home stadiums,
right?
And so, you know, unless that ever goes back to that, we'll never see that kind of atmosphere again. So, how would you guys describe the atmosphere and environment for that game?
Well, like Randall said, I mean, they were at the gates at 3:30 trying to get in. They weren't going to open them by 5 or 5:30. They had to open them early. There's supposedly 10,000 people in there. With all them signs up there, all on the hill, they're advertising that was all people, you know, just sitting down on the ground right there. So it was tremendous, and our team,
Chris Wright, by the way.
Yeah, that was Chris Wright. I'm glad
Kelly was the punter.
Yeah, I knew.
I got some help from our friends on Facebook.
Oh yeah, and we're very close. It just tells you. I'm getting old sometimes. But I mean, it was just unbelievable, that crowd. And the ball game was over with in the first quarter and a half. Really, we coasted. You know, I knew that we had probably played at the state championship game the week before in Early County. And like I said, our defense was just amazing. They were so fast. Very few people could move the ball. But really and truly, our toughest ball game was probably Lafayette for the region championship by Ray Van Teague's team, who is a Hall of Fame coach in the state of Georgia. And it was just unbelievable how we got better and better and better. But the biggest thing was we didn't have a what you call stars on that team, although it became stars, some of them after they left that team. It was a team. And that's kind of what we hung our hat on the whole time.
Tell you what kind of coach he was. The after the game, the next day, I guess it was, he was being interviewed by Rome News, and he was sad. And I don't remember who the sports writer was. And Lynn was. He said, "Coach, you look sad this morning. This is Saturday morning after we beat won the state championship." And Lynn said, "Yeah, I am. I'm gonna miss him."
That's hard.
I'm gonna miss him. But what also, and Coach, I think, told me this. He said, "Round people don't realize that the '91 team was better than the '90 team." Is that not right?
Yeah, probably. It was good players. We had a run, like I said, of great teams down through there. You know, we could play with anybody. And Coach, you're talking about back when there's only four classifications. They didn't have all these classifications, so. You know, Double A by far was the toughest in the state for years and years and years. And there were some larger schools in Double A and some smaller ones. So, but you know, it is what it is. And I'm proud of all those kids. I'm proud of that community supporting that. I'm glad. I'm sorry that some of them didn't get experience that. But they read that book. I think Randall did a good job of covering a lot of this stuff in that book.
Trying to, but Jimmy tells me the story about when they were in the huddle. I guess he was a scout team quarterback. You ran the scout team, you know. He always ran the scout team, called plays for the scout team. And they came back, and they was huffing and a-puffing and a-puffing. He said, "Quit breathing." And then he explained himself later on. He said, he didn't actually mean that, but he said, "I'm trying to make y'all tough. Quit breathing."
One of the things that you mentioned that really caught my attention was at that point in time, you know, had a great team chemistry, and, you know, as far as like standout players and things like that, they had talent, but it was more about that team concept and things of that nature. And then a lot of these guys went on to have success in their own field, whether that's, you know, in broadcasting or playing football in college, then Ken Urban going to the NFL and
coaching,
playing for what, 12
years? We got a lot
years.
Of people that's coached off of those teams. That's a lot of area coaches that are from parable assistant coaches. Yes. I mean, if you look at everybody's staff, you know.
Volunteer coaches and professional coaches.
It's got to make you really feel good to know that you had a big role in these guys' life and being tough on them, as you talked about, with your leadership and things of that nature. But then seeing the fruits of all of that, you know, come to fruition, and I bet you get a lot of phone calls and stuff like that, and guys saying, "You know, thank you, Coach, for all you did for me." We've seen that on our comments here, so that's got to make you feel really good.
Yeah, I was a tough love coach by far. You know, I worked. You know, we were kind of like Delta Fly. You had to earn your wings, and that's the kind of slogan we use when we're out there.
We're talking about Kenya Irvin. I got to say a little. I think I've told y'all this. I guess Kenny was an eighth grader in middle school. And this was after our season was over, and Kent and Lynn and I were talking after Booster Club, and I said, "Coach, we got anybody coming up? Maybe it's going to help us. You know, we'll be a freshman next year." And he said, "Well, there's an Irving kid down there. It could be special." I said, "Boy, did that prove to be right. I only played 11 years in the NFL, but he nailed him as an eighth grader that he could be special."
We've got a comment here from Clay Graham again. He said, "Glenn Beck can wait. Keep going." We've gone a little bit over here, but we couldn't stop the conversation at that point. And this has happened, you know, every time we've done, you know, part of this series here and our conversations about Lindell Linton Leather. We run out of time before we really got the story going.
Let me say this about Clay. Clay was another kid that was bought into the team concept. You know, we thought he was a quarterback and then playing offensive center. And bought right in. We had that type of team with people, once they learned their roles, they accepted their roles, and they didn't whine and cry about it, probably as much as the parents. But, you know, the kids bought in. That's the kind of, that right there is the kind of thing that we had going on in Purple at that time.
So is there ever a day of your life since this run and successful run at Pepperell that somebody doesn't bring this up? I would imagine
all the time it comes up in all the conversations. And that's what I was doing when I was at Georgia, trying to relay the same type of things that kids relay to me, the how I admire my coaches and my teammates, you know, that I got to have a reunion with. That was what was so special.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to defer to Randall McCord over here. I'm having a hard time thinking of how we can tie this together and end this conversation, because I'm like the people on the Facebook live feed. I'd like to keep this thing going, but I know that Kenneth's got a bookstore to run. And, Coach, I know you got some things going on, but I hope we can do this again, because this has been a pleasure to get to talk to you and hear these stories. This is really neat.
Right.
I think our listeners really appreciated it.
Okay.
It's been great. It's been great. Kenneth, we kind of overshadowed you over there.
Oh, but I'm enjoying myself. You're fine. But
like you told me early on, well, that's why you're in here for. Exactly, you're in here right to talk, so don't worry about that.
Right. Is there anything you want to make sure that we ask before we start to close out?
I think it's been really great.
He's been godsent to Lindale Linton Leather and the Lindale community. I want everybody to know that. I mean that sincerely. He has been godsent to us, and we appreciate him so much.
And not to mention just, you know, what the bookstore does for the community in terms of what you have with all of your different local content and things of that nature. It's a special place, and I'm glad our community has that and has you. So thank you. We appreciate you, you know, lending your time here every Wednesday to WLAQ and getting this series lined up with Mr. McCord. This has been really neat. Thank you. Well, I guess we'll have to wind it down, but any final thoughts anybody like to share as we get ready to wrap up, Coach?
No, I'm just at the point of my career, I'm very humbled and feel blessed to have having the opportunity to impact some people's lives, and also had some people impact my life. So I'm just, thank you for letting me come on and just share that with you.
Well, thank you very much, man. It's been a real pleasure. And then, let's see, my mom came in. She always gets the last word, as she's the matriarch of WLAQ. She said, this summer we need to have Lynn and Jeff on the show. And maybe your wife and Greg, too, should come in and have the whole family.
Oh, that'd be great.
I bet they got some stories, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Growing up, Honeycutt.
Yeah, probably do.
Wow.
That would be really neat. Really would be.
Yes.
So we'll have to do that. All right. Well, thank everybody. I'll go ahead and reintroduce everybody in the room. Of course, Kenneth Studdard of Dogwood Books needs no introduction here at WLAQ. He's with us every Wednesday here on the program, and also with my sister. She's been doing a segment with her for a very long time. Go check out Dogwood Books on Broad Street. And we have Randall McCord with us, author of Lindale, Lint, and Leather. Get the book. You will not regret it. It is fantastic. Been reading several chapters of it myself in the last few days getting ready for this. And then, of course, last but not least, legendary coach Lynn Honeycutt, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you,
Coach.